Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Friday, September 25th, 2015. Some surprises coming from Washington. John Boehner steps down as Speaker. China embraces cap and trade. And Shocker Ammer's going home from Gitmo. Elated when I read the news this morning that John Boehner, the guy who can cry really at the drop of almost anything, is stepping down as the Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives. Just hours after he openly wept at the appearance of Pope Francis at the Capitol, John Boehner got a few sniffles and told his colleagues that he's packing it up. And this is very interesting news. I, for one, was surprised to see it. And it appears that this is the repercussions of the effort by a few dozen right-wing, hardline radical Republicans in the House to demand a government shutdown over funding of Planned Parenthood. And the Beltway wisdom is that, freed from holding on to his job, that John Boehner will be able next week to prevent a shutdown of the federal government by these hardline right-wing radicals. I take a slightly different view, because since he is now a lame duck, and his exit date is set for the end of October, the people who have been defying him, and who want to make political points even at the cost of shutting down the government and not winning their particular battle over Planned Parenthood, I think they will be even more free to obstruct the path of the funding bills that have the Planned Parenthood budgets in them. And so I think it's going to be a very interesting free-for-all. The likely replacement for Boehner, Kevin McCarthy of Southern California, has some of the same issues with the Tea Party extremists in his own party. And he may not be able to win the vote by the caucus to become the next speaker. And we might end up with someone far worse than John Boehner. And then maybe I will shed a tear over his impending departure. But the Democrats have been playing decent defense in recent days, particularly in the Senate, blocking the bills, the so-called unclean bills that include defunding of Planned Parenthood, using the cloture process because it takes 60 votes to get beyond debate. And I would love to see a government shutdown averted. And it doesn't really matter to me if John Boehner's resignation plays a role in that. But Nancy Pelosi, top Democrat in the House, said God knows what's next over there. And she's from California. She said, coming from earthquake country, this is a big one. She told reporters that Boehner's resignation was a stark indication of the disarray of House Republicans. And Ted Cruz, still running for president, and he represents, while he's a senator, he represents this right-wing extremist faction. And his comment said, if it is correct that the speaker, before he resigns, has cut a deal with Pelosi to fund the Obama administration for the rest of this year, to fund Obamacare, to fund executive amnesty, to fund Planned Parenthood, to fund implementation of the Iran deal, and then presumably to land a cushy K Street job after joining with the Democrats to implement all of President Obama's priorities, that is not the behavior one would expect from a Republican Speaker of the House. Well, find me a Republican former Speaker of the House who hasn't gone to K Street to make a 7- or 8-figure income with a lobbying firm, like Dennis Hastert, who is now in disgrace. Outed by the Patriot Act that he helped pass. So it's a real interesting feeding frenzy in Washington. This has, I think, shifted dynamics in ways that make the efforts to shut down the government next week even more unpredictable. And Andy Borowitz nailed it. He said John Boehner announced he would resign as Speaker and leave Congress, but said he would continue repealing Obamacare from his home in Ohio. Borowitz continues in his fake quote of Boehner, "A lot of the Speaker's job is administrative, which is time-consuming and tiring. In retirement, I'll have more time for what I really love, repealing Obamacare." And while that's funny, the reason there were 46 or however, there may be more than 50 votes now that were taken in the House under Speaker Boehner's leadership to just eviscerate Obamacare, he always knew those votes were going nowhere. The Senate would not agree. And so it was safe for him to allow the radicals to operate in their own little playpen. And it's anybody's guess what will happen next. Another surprise from inside the Beltway, as China had some bold steps that were announced, leaked late yesterday. And despite the fact that President Obama has not been able to persuade our Congress to buy into a cap-and-trade plan, which I think is a very weak way to try to control emissions, but it is a market-driven system that can pass muster with the capitalists who run the globe these days. And I'm not a big fan of cap-and-trade. I would like to see a kind of cap-and-dividend, where those who are most impacted by the higher cost of energy as a result of controls on carbon emissions are given some relief. In any event, this is a political game of one-upsmanship, and it helps fill in the blanks because last year Obama and President Xi Jinping reached a deal where China agreed to cut their emissions or cut the growth of their emissions by 2030. And it was a very uneven agreement where the U.S. is taking hits much sooner, and the Chinese cutbacks are in the later years, the out years, of that agreement. Well, if cap-and-trade is implemented in 2017, as Xi Jinping is promising, that could go a long way toward achieving greater cutbacks in China, and they might actually meet those goals by 2030. Obama and the Chinese leader also have reached an agreement on cyber theft, and I'm going to tell you about it first and then comment on who the real rogue in the room is. Obama said today that he'd reached a common understanding with China's leader to combat cyber-enabled theft of intellectual property. With President Xi standing beside him at a Rose Garden news conference, Obama referred to the cyber attacks against American targets and said, "I indicated it has to stop." Now, this is so one-sided. As I mentioned yesterday, I understand that the consensus view is that China is responsible for the Sony hack. Well, maybe they think North Korea did that, but nobody really knows. That China is believed to be responsible for the hack of the Office of Personnel Management, where all of the files on workers, government workers, were hacked and copied. But we have no proof of that. And while America doesn't admit to its own citizens about the aggressive cyber warfare operations that we're engaged in, we know the outlines. We know that the head of the NSA also runs the Cyber Command. And we must believe that the Cyber Command is not purely defensive. We know through the revelation of the Stuxnet virus that was inserted in Iran's nuclear facilities, an act of war in my opinion, that the U.S. is capable of aggressive, offensive cyber warfare tactics. And so to hold this news conference and point the finger at China without acknowledging that we have massive, offensive cyber warfare operations underway on a daily basis, well, it's another reason why America is often viewed as a hypocrite. Now, the real good news that broke just a couple of hours before I sat down here to talk with you today is that Shakir Amer is finally going to be released from Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. He is the British resident, a native of Saudi Arabia, who's been there for 14 years, cleared for release at least since 2009. He has been the subject of an amazing public relations campaign, a grassroots effort launched by our friend Andy Worthington in Britain. Andy, of course, is the journalist who runs andyworthington.com, and that is the most useful source of information about America's gulag at Guantanamo. And Andy has led the effort with the huge inflatable Shakir doll that he took in, you know, all over London, all over England, got people, prominent folks like Roger Waters, Peter Gabriel, Sting, to pose with the inflatable Shakir. And that campaign has finally paid off. President Obama called Prime Minister David Cameron yesterday and informed him that Ashton Carter has taken his proverbial boot off the windpipe of Shakir Amer. And in some 30 days, he should be transferred to Great Britain. Now, it's not clear if he'll be incarcerated in Britain or if he will be freed upon arrival. I hope that that's the case. After all, one of his, I think, three or four children was born at about the same time he was taken to Guantanamo. And from inside sources who have talked to Shakir Amer at Guantanamo, we know that he has been deeply harmed by his brutal incarceration, by torture, and it's been compounded by hunger strikes that he has led. And his psychological state is fragile, if not in bad condition. The other thing I want to point out is I hope that Leslie Stahl at 60 Minutes and CBS News finally knows who the hell Shakir Amer is. You may recall a year and a half ago, she got this exclusive opportunity to walk through a cell block at Guantanamo with the commandant. And Shakir Amer started talking to her from behind his cell, behind the cell door. And he got her attention. They broadcast some of his comments on 60 Minutes. And it was clear that Leslie Stahl had no idea who Shakir Amer is and why so many people care about his release. Pope Francis took his roadshow to New York yesterday and this morning gave an address at the United Nations where he called for peace and environmental justice. He blamed the exploitation of natural resources on a selfish and boundless thirst for power and material prosperity. And he sharply rebuked the world powers on the Security Council for failing to agree on a peaceful transition for the wars in the Middle East, referring specifically to Syria and Iraq, where people have faced the alternative of either fleeing or paying for their adhesions to good and to peace by their own lives or by enslavement. And I don't expect the international community to respond directly to the calls of Pope Francis. But he's raising issues that our leaders should be raising. There isn't a strong voice for peace in this country among our elected leaders today. And the idea that more military action by the United States, more interventions, more drone strikes, more special forces, secret operations is somehow going to stabilize that region and bring it into the orbit of influence of the United States is sheer lunacy. And we live with that on a daily basis. Every day I like to thank people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. People like Bob Donjakour, the TV technician here in San Francisco, Mark Brodsky, Jeff Lipinski, Faith Peoples, Nick Yaksich. They are all monthly subscribers, and I appreciate each and every one of you. I want to invite you to come over to peterbcollins.com. The new and improved updated website is available to you now, and we have streamlined the presentation on the homepage to make it more friendly to your smartphone and your iPad or other tablet devices. So if you want to take out a new subscription, you go to the menu button, which is in the upper right, and you pull that down, and it will take you to subscribe. And at that next page, you can choose $5, $10, $20 a month, whatever fits your budget, the $50 annual subscription. Our new iPhone app is available at the Apple App Store for iPhones and iPads. There are so many ways for you to enjoy the Peter B. Collins podcast. We're on Stitcher, on iTunes, and on TuneIn. So do a little experimenting and find out the best way for you to access our podcast. And I'll remind you that earlier this week, I post a short 2 or 3 minute podcast with the information about the changes at our site and how to adjust your RSS feed if it's necessary. So take a look and see if you're getting the interview podcast that I posted yesterday with Roger Schuller and our daily news and comment podcast. And if you're not receiving them, drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com, and we will sort through the technical issues. Well, Saudi Arabia is trying to fend off a plan proposed by the Netherlands at the United Nations Human Rights Council to investigate Saudi Arabia and its allies for their military offensive in Yemen and for the large casualties that have hit the civilian population. At least 1,500 civilians have been killed and 3,500 injured just between March and June. And the Saudi airstrikes have continued on an almost daily basis since June. So this is just a snapshot. Now, what is really interesting and perverse is that this article in the New York Times fails to mention that Saudi Arabia has been elevated to a key position at the same UN Human Rights Council. And this occurred over the summer, but has just surfaced in recent days. That's right. Saudi Arabia has been appointed to a panel at the UN Human Rights Council that would interview and make the short list of experts from whom the investigators are chosen to look into specific human rights complaints. Now, Saudi Arabia has a just miserable record of human rights in its own country. And as we've seen in its assault on neighboring Yemen, those same low standards seem to apply. And so it is an outrage that this UN Human Rights Commission has now been infiltrated by the Saudis. Also in the Middle East, there's a lot of speculation about what Vladimir Putin will say in his UN speech on Monday. And after his speech, he is scheduled to meet with President Obama to talk about Syria and Ukraine. And I have information here from Vice News today about the serious military buildup in Syria by Russia, including a dozen twin-engine aircraft called the Sukhoi 25s that provide close air support for ground troops. Syrian fighter pilots were flying newly arrived Russian warplanes in Syria recently. And in addition, they're beefing up a Navy base, or at least a port, to permit shipments to be more easily brought into Syria. They have taken over a base and expanded the runway at a town called Latakia. And this comes at some risk to Russia because, of course, the U.S. and its allies, including Turkey, could bomb these positions almost at will. And earlier this week, Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel met with Putin in Moscow, and they struck a deal to avoid essentially bombing each other's assets. But this has the potential for many unintended consequences. And what if a Turkish fighter jet shoots down a Russian fighter or bombs this Latakia base? This could, be the basis for a major escalation of the war in Syria. But it appears, based on an analysis from Vice News, that Putin is kind of in the driver's seat here. And the U.S., of course, with a lack of a real policy about Syria, no articulated mission or strategy, the failure of our $500 million effort to train up so-called Syrian moderates. Most recently, one of the four remaining members of those that Division 30 apparently defected. And so Obama is on his heels once again, as he was with Syria 2 years ago, over the chemical weapons flap. And once again, it's Vladimir Putin who may save his butt. It's going to be fascinating. We'll keep you posted. In today's New York Times, on the op-ed page, Paul Krugman neatly summarizes corporate criminal activity that was exposed this week. The CEO of Volkswagen, who was forced to resign after we learned that his diesel cars knew when emissions tests were being conducted and produced deceptively low results. The former president of a peanut company, I think in Georgia, has been sentenced to 28 years in prison for knowingly shipping tainted products that later killed 9 people. And the new drug czar, the hedge fund guy who bought Turing Pharmaceuticals and then jacked up the price by 1,000 times or more on a specific drug. And interestingly, Krugman ties this to an untimely op-ed published by Jeb Bush, the would-be next president of the United States, denouncing a flood of creativity-crushing and job-killing rules promoted by the Obama administration. Now, some of these are the rules that exposed the fraud at Volkswagen. Some of these are the rules that enabled the very stiff sentence for the peanut guy. And Jeb Bush, in particular, wants to eliminate rules related to the disposal of coal ash, which has polluted two rivers in the South in recent years. And he wants to unleash for-profit education, the charter schools. And on that score, I want to direct you, the link is in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com, to the newest report from Madison, Wisconsin's Center for Media and Democracy. And it's a stunner. They have identified 2,500 charter schools that have been closed since 2000. And most of these failed charter schools got massive funding from the U.S. Department of Education. 2,500 schools since 2000. And yet the promoters of charter schools who want to eviscerate public education, they are unbowed. They continue to demand more funding for charter schools, and they want to hammer the teachers' unions and tenure and all of the other elements of our public school system. And in this report, just in taking a look at the state of Michigan in the last few years, in just one school year, 25 charter schools awarded grants from the Department of Education never even opened. And the amount of money wasted is at least $200 million, if not far more. Also in the bureaucracy, a new audit reveals some security issues at healthcare.gov, the Obamacare website. The system is known as MIDAS. It cost $110 million, and it is vulnerable to hacks on a number of levels. Now, while there are no medical records contained at healthcare.gov, it does include names, social security numbers, birth dates, addresses, phone numbers, passport numbers, employment status, financial account information of customers. And a technologist here in San Francisco at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Jeremy Jalula, said it sounds like a goldmine for ID thieves. I'm kind of surprised that this information has not yet been compromised. And I'll just tell you that a couple of months ago, I went to the Covered California website, that's the exchange for Obamacare here in the Golden State, and I immediately had the computer I used infected with a malware virus. I couldn't believe it. And it was a major setback. I lost a lot of archived files, and I had to completely scrub that computer to get rid of the malware virus. My friend Richard Rappaport has an excellent op-ed published in Friday's San Francisco Chronicle entitled, Candidate Had a Job-Killing Touch. It's about Carly Fiorina. And most of the critical accounts of candidate Fiorina's executive experience focus, properly, on her role in doing serious damage at Hewlett-Packard when she was made CEO, I think, in 1999. And Rappaport recaps some of those issues. But he also notes that before she came to California, she worked for Lucent Labs, Lucent Technology, and the AT&T Bell Labs. And Rappaport has a soft spot for that kind of pure research that was funded by Monopoly Telephone Service. And he notes that she kind of glosses over the Lucent era in her rags-to-riches secretary-to-CEO story. And in fact, her father was dean of a law school. She went to Stanford. She's a woman who had many real opportunities as she was growing up. And she acts as if she was born in a mobile home on the wrong side of Memphis. So Rappaport winds up with this. Despite the millions being spent on campaign efforts designed to convince voters otherwise, Fiorina as a senator or American president would almost certainly be a disaster. Her election would sooner or later reveal her as a one-dimensional corporate bottom feeder whose only answer to fixing a corporate bottom line is to fire thousands of people rather than find and employ creative ways to use the immense collected brain power to grow the American technology sector into renewed high-tech good times. Republican voters, pay attention. Fiorina's purge at Lucent and disastrous tenure at HP highlight her as the kind of retrograde business executive we cannot afford to elect to higher office. Fiorina has proved herself to be an uncreative corporate drone and likely a sheer catastrophe for American business and technology. She has not shown herself capable of mastering the long-term strategic thinking necessary to truly succeed in American technology. Well said, Mr. Rappaport. And let's hope that the Fiorina campaign doesn't try to trash my friend Richard Rappaport the way they are Jeffrey Sonnenfeld. He is an associate dean at the Yale School of Management, and he's been a longtime critic of Carly Fiorina. Most recently, he was quoted at the Republican debate hosted by CNN, and he described her as, Carly Fiorina had one of the worst tenures for a CEO that he has ever seen. Well, Carly retorted that Sonnenfeld is a well-known Clintonite and had it out for me the moment I arrived at Hewlett-Packard. And now the mudslinging coming from her staff relates to an episode when Sonnenfeld was a professor at Emory University in Atlanta. And the management at Emory basically smeared him because he was offered a job at their crosstown rival, the Georgia Institute of Technology. So Emory's president said that they had surveillance video of Sonnenfeld defacing walls of a business school hallway. And they basically exaggerated whatever the issue was and told Sonnenfeld to resign or be arrested. And as a result, Georgia Tech withdrew its offer to Sonnenfeld, who is now at Yale. In 2000, the settlement regarding a wrongful termination lawsuit led Emory to withdraw all accusations that Professor Sonnenfeld committed vandalism or intentional property damage. So it's completely false. But the Fiorina campaign, which is still defending the non-existent videos that Carly cited about Planned Parenthood in the last debate, is intent on sliming Dr. Sonnenfeld, whether it's true or not. And I think that's a serious indication of what she would be like if elected president or vice president. And finally today, I'm noting the coverage of a story we brought you yesterday about the Citizens Commission proposing the so-called Snowden Treaty to eliminate illegal surveillance and rein in government snooping. And it's gotten decent coverage, the Associated Press story I've seen in several newspapers. But not a single one of them mentions that this effort has been led by David Miranda, the partner of journalist Glenn Greenwald, who says that his detention at Heathrow Airport for 9 hours as he was carrying Snowden files from Germany to Brazil for Greenwald led him to propose this treaty. And I think it's a glaring omission. That's why I wanted to bring it to your attention. I don't know Miranda, but I think he deserves credit for a very bright idea and for challenging the authority of government to snoop on people like you and me. Thanks for listening to my ranting and raving, my news and comment podcast. Feel free to share it widely. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.